Thank you very much, Kate. And I think that's a marvelous goal, to have the mind that wrote the course, to have that, every bit of that clarity, right, with none missing. That's a wonderful goal. So we are here now for the 7 steps to awakening. I have been the admin for the last hour, and Jacqueline will now be the admin as I share from the 7 steps to awakening. And then when I finish, I will take over the admin again when Jacqueline shares for the movie discussion group. So we have tag team adminning happening. I think we had a little bit of that this morning too. I am going to begin in the 7 steps to awakening tonight by looking at quote 793 from step 4, which is the only Sri Muruganar quote in step 4. I started looking at 793 last week, barely got started, and so tonight we will look at that more in depth. But before doing that, I am going to play a song. And just like this morning, just before the weekly gathering, I had selected holiday songs. I have selected another holiday song. This one really reminds me of, making the choice to be in seclusion in order to focus on truth. Because the name of this song is Christmas is Quiet, and it's by an artist named Cliff Richard.
Joy of Christmas Day.
Sweet song. Again, that was Christmas is Quiet by Cliff Richard. So, we are here for the Seven Steps to Awakening, as I mentioned already. And I'm going to read from Sri Muruganar's quote in Step 4. It's quote number 793. If it sounds familiar, it's because we started this last week, but we didn't get very far with it. Here's the quote. Grace, the Supreme, is rare and unique. There is nothing that resembles it. To make it the object of one's desire is the most virtuous of desires. As all other desires are quenched through the very desire for it, it will shine in the heart spontaneously. And it looks like I spent some time quoting this one quote because I have about 7 journal entries on this quote. And again, last week we looked at the first journal entry, but what I will do is just go back and read that as a quick review. So that was journal entry 793A. Let me just pop, sometimes I forget now to pop the links in the room, but let me pop the link in the room in case anybody likes to read along. There you are. All right, so last week we looked at this journal entry. It was 2 weeks ago. Last week I was at the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I just remembered. I was going to say, it seems like a long time, but it was 2 weeks ago. So here is 793A, a review. If I want only truth, everything else will take care of itself. This is a promise I choose to trust. So that's my first journal entry on this quote. If I want only truth, everything else will take care of itself. This is a promise I choose to trust. All right, so let me read the quote again, and then we'll go look at 793B, my second contemplation of this quote. Here's the quote. Grace, the Supreme, is rare and unique. There is nothing that resembles it. To make it the object of one's desire is the most virtuous of desires. As all other desires are quenched through the very desire for it, it will shine in the heart spontaneously. So now I'm going to look at my next journal entry, which is 793B. This is from September 25th, 2015. Yesterday there was an experience that I don't quite know how to describe. From this perspective of mind, something else took control of the body and silently, gently asked mind to submit, to back away and allow it to happen. As this moved the body, and mind did its best to submit and allow, I was able to see mind's primary objections, which I see as obstacles that must be let go. Number one, There was a concern about how I would be perceived if awakening was allowed, if this moved in fully and mind's perceived control over the body ended. Underneath this concern was a fear that mind knows what is reasonable, and without mind's wise control, absolute foolishness would move this body. Number two, there was a concern that I would not be able to work or do the practical things that I do every day without mind. For example, could I work out without mind, or would I simply stumble about? Could I do my job, or would I be fired for becoming a bumbling fool? As I look at these now, I see these two are the same fear. So I remember this day. I don't remember it in great detail, but I do remember it. Something did happen. Where something other than the mind or self-will took complete control of the body, of my body, and it asked the mind to submit and to allow it to happen. And I remember mind doing its best to be very obedient. It was really doing its best to just submit and let this something else move the body. And I remember the body went outside. It was moved outside. And I remember being in the driveway. And I remember getting on my hands and knees, and I was looking at something. I don't know what I was looking at, maybe an ant, I don't remember now, but I was on my hands and knees and I was looking at something, and I remember there was great interest in whatever I was looking at. But I remember mind's fears when I was in the front yard, on the driveway, down on my hands and knees, looking at whatever I was looking at. I remember mind being afraid of, you know, what if somebody sees me? They're going to think I've lost my mind. And that's when these other fears came in, that if I surrendered to whatever it was that was moving the body, if mind completely ended. So that mind had no control anymore. You know, there was this fear that all sense would go out the window with mind. You know, there was this clear idea. I could see clearly this idea. I don't mean that it was a clear idea. I mean that I could see it clearly. There was this idea that I could see very, very clearly, a belief that the mind knew what was best, that the mind knew how to operate and function in the world, and that without the mind, you know, again, everything practical would be lost. You know, like you hear in the journal entry, you know, would I be able to work out? Would I be able to do my job? You know, would I be able to interact with my family? Would I just crawl around in the driveway looking at ants? Right? And so I don't remember how long this event lasted. You know, not super long, but not super short. My guess is somewhere between half an hour and 45 minutes, you know. And then eventually it faded, and I could feel, you know, the the self again being back in control, the mind being back in control. But what I thought was really valuable about this event was becoming aware in a very clear way of the idea that the mind was sense, good sense. That the mind was good sense. And that if I let the mind go, good sense would be lost too. I know that this belief needs to be seen. Because as long as this belief hides in the unconscious, we won't let go of the mind. We're not going to let go of our good sense. So I think it was very important that this event occurred so that I could see that belief in the mind and bring healing attention to that belief. So let me read the journal entry again. Yesterday there was an experience that I don't quite know how to describe. From the perspective of mind, something else took control of the body and silently, gently asked mind to submit, to back away and allow it to happen. As this moved the body and mind did its best to submit and allow, I was able to see mind's primary objections, which I see as obstacles that must be let go. Number one, there was concern about how I would be perceived if awakening was allowed, if this moved in fully and mind's perceived control over the body ended. Underneath this concern was a fear that mind knows what is reasonable. And without mind's wise control, you hear that? Mind knows what is reasonable. And without mind's wise control, absolute foolishness would move this body. Like I said, I would just crawl around in the driveway looking at ants and not do my job or anything else practical. Number two, there was a concern that I would not be able to work or do the practical things that I do every day without mind. For example, could I work out without mind, or would I simply stumble about? Could I do my job, or would I be fired for becoming a bumbling fool? And then I wrote, as I look at these now, I see these two are the same fear. And they absolutely are that same fear. They're that fear or that idea that mind is wisdom. Mind is sensible. And without mind, you know, if you let mind completely end, then everything sensible, everything practical is lost. That's the fear. So let me read the quote again, and then we'll go to the next journal entry. The quote says, "Grace, the supreme, is rare and unique. There is nothing that resembles it. To make it the object of one's desire is the most virtuous of desires, as all other desires are quenched through the very desire for it. It will shine in the heart spontaneously." So we could say that what the previous journal entry was looking at was the desire for mind. Desire for mind. Backed by the belief that mind is sensible and practical. And so it's really nice, I think, that the quote says, as we focus on our desire for the supreme, that all other desires are quenched through the very desire for the supreme. Right? As I desire the supreme wholeheartedly, the desire for the mind would be reduced. As my desire for the truth grows, the desire for the perceived practicality of the mind weakens. So I'm going to look at 793C. It's still talking about the experience from the previous day. During this experience yesterday, I heard this, which was moving the body amid mind's fears. Now this here is, when it says, I heard this, this is capital. So I'm referring to that which was moving the body as this with a capital T. During the experience yesterday, I heard this, which was moving the body amid mind's fears, silently ask, will you trust me? It saw mind's fear that the body would become a bumbling fool without mind's reasonable and sensible control. Mind, in spite of its fear, did not turn and run from this. It practiced, moment upon moment, submitting and trusting the mysterious unknown force. And that's exactly what I experienced. I experienced the mind doing its very, very best to submit. I experienced the mind's willingness to end and let this take over. But again, it couldn't quite do it. No matter how hard it tried, it couldn't quite do it because of the idea that everything sensible would be lost. But it was interesting to watch. I suppose if you ask me now what I learned from that, although I don't know if I knew it at the time, I think I might have learned that mind can't let go of itself. Because mind was so willing, in spite of its fear. It seems like something else would have to move in so big, bigger than it did that day. Something else would have to move in so big that mind had no choice but to lose its grip on itself. That as long as mind perceives itself as having a choice, in spite of willingness, because I saw great willingness that day, mind just can't let go. The letting go has to happen. And again, from what I perceived, it's because mind trusts itself. And because it trusts itself, it can't let go of itself. So when I reflect back on the quote, after looking at that, what I'm understanding from the quote is, again, since mind can't let go of itself, since something bigger needs to kind of come in a very big way so that mind loses that grip it has on itself, that what we can do is desire with our whole heart, our whole soul, and our whole mind, with all of our strength, desire that mysterious unknown. You know, if we think of what we often call the law of attraction, and I've talked about here in the last several weeks how I used to have this book, this picture book that I made that I looked at, you know, when I was younger, dreaming of what I wanted to occur in this lifetime. And that's, you know, so much of what was in that book has occurred, you know, in a very specific way. Whatever force that is that took my desire as I looked at that, as I looked at that picture book, and then brought those circumstances into manifestation. Whatever force that was, it can do the same with my desire for truth. If I really desire the truth, really desire it, above all else, then that force can create the circumstance where it comes in big and mind loses its grip on itself, especially a mind that had the willingness to submit but just couldn't. Again, 793C, reflecting back on that day. During the experience yesterday, I heard this, which was moving the body amid mind's fears. Silently ask, will you trust me? It saw mind's fear that the body would become a bumbling fool without mind's reasonable and sensible control. Mind, in spite of its fear, did not turn and run from this. It practiced, moment upon moment, submitting and trusting the mysterious, unknown force. And so I'm going to read the Muruganar quote again. Grace, the supreme, is rare and unique. There is nothing that resembles it. To make it the object of one's desire is the most virtuous of desires. As all other desires are quenched through the very desire for it, it will shine in the heart spontaneously. And so now I'm going to look at 793D, still reflecting on the previous day's experience. In yesterday's experience, mind desired the perfection of trust, even though absolute perfection of trust would lead to no mind at all. This tells me that I can trust. Something is happening. This, the mysterious force, is here. And everything is moving in the direction this would have it go. For now, my role is to remain intuitive and trusting, while allowing all that is happening to happen fully. So that was my, I'm going to call that judgment. That was my judgment at the time. That even though mind was unable to submit the previous day. Again, I saw mind's great willingness. And I took mind's great willingness as a good sign. You know, it wasn't a completely resistant mind, although there was resistance in it, right? I remember I had another experience many years ago when I was writing NTI Revelation, and some of you have heard about this experience. In that experience, and this happened as I was scribing, I would often have, you know, experiences as I was scribing. I wouldn't even notice that I was scribing because the experience would overtake me. And so I had this experience as I was scribing where we went in and we were looking at the mind. We were looking, you know, at the guilt in the mind, at the fear in the mind. I don't remember what else. I remember looking at the guilt and the fear. And I was allowing myself to be shown. So I was allowing myself to be shown by this that was guiding that experience. And what happened was somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow we went beyond the individual mind of Regina. And we ended up at a place that I could only call the mind of the cosmos. Only, you know, it wasn't that I was Regina looking at the mind of the cosmos. When we went there, I was the mind of the cosmos. And by the mind of the cosmos, I mean the mind that created everything. And there was this knowing that all I had to do at this point was relinquish the entire creation. And that would be what we would call the entire known universe. And if I just relinquished the entire creation, I would step over some type of invisible threshold where I would go beyond the experience of form and manifestation. And when this was presented to me, a great fear arose. In fact, my exact thought was, I don't want to know this. Meaning, I don't want to know myself as the mind that created the cosmos. I don't want to know this. I wanted to see myself as little and small as Regina. I didn't want to see myself as anything else. And I certainly wasn't ready to see myself as whatever was beyond the mind of the cosmos. And so as soon as I decided, I don't want to know this, it's like this really quick rewind happened, and I was plopped right back into the experience of Regina. And my guess is that must have happened in the fall of 2006, because I was writing NTI Revelation. I think that was around October of 2006. And then the experience that I just now talked about was September of 2015. So we're really talking 9 years later. And what I see when I look at the two experiences and the reaction that happened with the two experiences. First of all, I see in the first experience, I was more identified with the mind because when the thought was, I don't want to know this, I didn't see it as mind saying, I don't want to know this. It was I saw it as my thought. I saw it as my opinion. I don't want to know this, right? This was mine. And so there was more attachment to the mind in 2006, and also great resistance. There was zero willingness. You know, when this opportunity snuck up on me, there was zero willingness to move forward and see what would happen if I relinquished the cosmos. I just wanted to get the heck out of there. And when this other experience happened, which wasn't the same experience, but when this other experience happened in 2015, first of all, I don't know how to say what I am in this, but my experience was that I was some type of an observer who was both observing this, which was moving the body and observing what the body was doing, and observing the mind, both its willingness and its fears. I was somewhere in between this and the mind, of watching both. So I would say there was less attachment to the mind then. I was the observer of the mind rather than I am the mind, right? I was watching the mind. And then the other thing that was different was the mind didn't just want to get the heck out of there. Mind actually wanted to submit. It really tried its best. It tried its very best. And so when I look at the two experiences and I contrast the difference in the experience over that course of 9 years, I saw that as, and again, this was my judgment, I saw that as positive, you know, like, wow, some progress has made here. There's more willingness here for mind to die and for whatever the experience is when mind dies to become apparent than there was 9 years ago. And so I thought, so this means I can trust the path that I am on. I can trust the steps that I am taking, and I can just continue in this direction. Something it felt like is going right here. And so again, number 793D says, in yesterday's experience, mind desired the perfection of trust, even though absolute perfection of trust would lead to no mind at all. This tells me that I can trust. Something is happening. This, the mysterious force, is here, and everything is moving in the direction this would have it go. For now, my role is to remain intuitive and trusting, while allowing all that is happening to happen fully. So that's 793D. So before I read 793E, let me read the quote again. Again, this is a Sri Muruganar quote from Step 4 of the Seven Steps to Awakening. It is quote number 793. Grace, the Supreme, is rare and unique. There is nothing that resembles it. To make it the object of one's desire is the most virtuous of desires. As all other desires are quenched through the very desire for it, it will shine in the heart spontaneously. All right, so I'm going to read 793E from my journal. How do I make this? And again, that's a capital T, this, referring to that mysterious force. Or just referring to the mystery of truth. How do I make this the focus of my desire? Let mind practice submitting, becoming less and less and less, and trust. Let everything else happen naturally. Let it be whatever it will be. One of my favorite scriptures from the Bible is when John the Baptist says, after baptizing Jesus, and then Jesus is walking away from him, going towards the Mount of Temptation in order to spend 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. What John the Baptist says is, it is time for me to become less, that he may become more. It is time for me to become less, that he may become more. And of course, people interpret that as John the Baptist as a teacher, because he was a teacher at the time, becoming less so that Jesus could be a stronger teacher. But certainly that is not how the scripture speaks to me, nor has it ever spoken to me in that way. It refers to the false identity becoming less. So that the true identity, which right now I will call grace, can become more. And it's literally practicing being less. And one way that I see to practice being less is to let things be as they are. It doesn't feel like I'm practicing being less if I'm trying to make things be the way I want them to be, right? It seems like being less and attempting to be in control are exact opposites. So by allowing everything to be as it is, by allowing everyone to be as they are, right, I become less and less and less. That I being the mind that wants control, the mind that thinks it's reasonable and sensible and practical. I mean, there are all kinds of reasons, I suppose, for taking control. You know, one is just absolute fear. You know, if this doesn't go my way, something bad might happen. But I don't think that's the most common reason for taking control. It certainly happens, but I think the most common reason for taking control, or at least attempting to take control, is because we each think that our mind is sensible, practical, reasonable, and of course, right. And because I'm right, because I'm the sensible one, I'm the practical one, I'm the reasonable one, I know what's best here, I want it done my way. See, that's the fingerprint of the ego. That's what I saw that could not submit fully. That belief that the mind was reasonable and practical and sensible. And so if I want to become less and less and less, then even when the mind is speaking up, I know what's best here. I'm the reasonable one. I'm the practical one, right? I need to be willing to let things go another way. That's how I become less. I, in the sentence being, the reasonable, practical mind, or at least what is believed to be the reasonable, practical mind. It is time for me to become less, that he can become more. So the journal entry says, how do I make this, with a capital T, how do I make this the focus of my desire? One more thing I'd like to say before I finish reading that is, I think sometimes the idea about desire is that desire is in the heart, you know. So when I read, you know, when I read the question, how can I make this the focus of my desire? One idea that pops up immediately is just, you know, just sit around and pray. You know, just pray for this desire to grow. Just feel your desire for God and go deeper and deeper and deeper into it as a heart experience. And I think that's great. I think that's great to do that. But I don't know that that alone is enough. Because what if I sit here in my office and I go deep into contemplation and deep into prayer and meditation and desire truth for, you know, a few hours a day? And then when the time ends and I need to move on to the working part of my day, if I then go into the working part of my day and return immediately to a mind that perceives itself as practical and right, and I start trying to exercise control. I start telling everybody what to do and how to do it. And, no, you did it wrong. Let me do it for you. My God, you can't do anything right. I have to do it. You know, if I return to that, and I'm with that for the rest of the day, which is going to be more like the next 10 to 12 hours, you know, mathematically, even if I spend 2, 3, 4 hours in the heart, if I spend the next 8, 10, 12 hours in that controlling mind, I don't seem to be going forward very fast. In fact, I'm reminded of a quote that I can't quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj that says something about, you know, we take a step forward and then we take a step back. We take a step forward and then we take a step back, right? And that we need to be more consistent, more earnest or something like that. That's what I see, is that, you know, when that idea pops up, which by itself, it's not a bad idea. It's just that by itself, it's not enough. That idea of spending 2, 3, 4 hours in the heart really desiring truth, really desiring the mind's end, by itself, it's not enough, because then I could get up from that 3 or 4 hours and take a step backward. So notice what the journal entry says. How do I make this the focus of my desire? Let mind practice submitting, becoming less and less and less, and trust. Let everything else happen naturally. Let it be whatever it will be. So that's talking about the other, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day. You know, it could call it the loving all method. Right? But it's talking about how to be in that work part of the day, you know, where I'm being with work or I'm interacting with family. How to be in that part of the day, the outward focused part of the day, and live the desire for truth. Live the desire for truth instead of living the belief in the practicality of mind. And those are really my choices in every moment. I can live the desire for truth, or I can live the belief in the practicality of mind. Which one am I teaching myself? How do I make this the focus of my desire? Let mind practice submitting, becoming less and less and less, and trust. Let everything else happen naturally. Let it be whatever it will be. All right, I'm going to read the quote again. Grace, the supreme, is rare and unique. There is nothing that resembles it. To make it the object of one's desire is the most virtuous of desires. As all other desires are quenched through the very desire for it, it will shine in the heart spontaneously. So I'm going to read my last journal entry with this quote, which is journal entry 793F. The promise is this. Through the active practice of true desire, which is intuitive submitting with trust, this, with a capital T, will become obviously present and natural. I trust this promise. I gratefully commit to the moment-to-moment practice. I'll read that again. The promise is this. Through the active practice of true desire, which is intuitive submitting with trust, this will become obviously present and natural. I trust this promise. I gratefully commit to the moment-to-moment practice. So again, that's the judgment that I made. At the conclusion of my contemplation of this quote, I saw it as a promise. A promise that if I desire the truth, really desire the truth, which means not just in the heart, in that prayerful way, but also in the way I live and the way I interact with the world. You know, an active desire, living from that desire instead of from the belief that mind is practical. I saw that there was a promise that in that desire, there was a force. A force that would respond to the desire, to the point that it would come in big, so big at some point that even though mind may still have fears, its grip on itself would be swept away. Like how, imagine you're trying to hold on to the edge of a swimming pool. You're holding on to the edge of a swimming pool because you're afraid you're going to drown. And then out of nowhere, nobody knows where it comes from, but out of nowhere, this humongous 14-foot wave comes through the swimming pool. And as hard as you try to hold on to the edge of that swimming pool, that wave sweeps you away anyway. What created the 14-foot tsunami wave? The desire for truth. Not the heart desire alone. And by heart desire, I mean setting in the heart during times of seclusion. But the heart desire backed up by the active desire, the living from the desire, the making moment-to-moment decisions from the desire instead of from the belief that mind is practical. That creates the tsunami wave that sweeps the mind away. I'm going to play a song. We have 5 minutes left, and that's the end of that particular quote. And a song just came to my mind. Just waiting for iTunes to start. Okay, here's the song. It's a Karen Drucker song, and it's called Let Go of the Shore. Let Go of the Shore. So thank you very much, everyone. What I am going to do is turn this mic over to Jacqueline for our movie discussion group. And Jacqueline, just to let you know, about the first 5 minutes of the movie discussion group, I will not be available. I'm going to save my recording, take a potty break, and grab a quick snack because it's dinner time here. But all of that should only take me about 5 minutes, and then I will be back. All right, the mic is yours.